we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Independent, read by Carolyn Brown.
An advertising campaign warning of the links between cannabis use and mental health damage was launched today. The television advert focuses on the negative effects of the drug: memory loss, paranoia, panic attacks, and memory loss.
Thanks to Toby Pope for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Fred McCauley and Mark Steele. And opposite them on my left, Shappi Kosandi and Jeremy Hardy. Fred, whose nosy neighbours lodged a complaint?
Is this the second Home Secretary?
It is, yes.
Ah, yes. Jacquie. How do you pronounce her name? Jacquie.
I try not to bother, but... Miss Smith.
As her neighbours call her, Jacquie. Because... Eh? Thank you. Can I just say, I've actually got some sympathy with her because she asked for advice on what she should do about having one or two homes, was given the advice and has followed it. And basically, it's as simple as this, folks. If you are in government or if you're an MP and you've got a second home, you can claim expenses on that second home. Jacquie has said that her main residence is the house that she lives sometimes up to two nights a week in her sister's house. And her second home is someplace else, presumably where her constituency is. It's similar for all of us here. I mean, we're travelling comedians. When we're away from home, we're allowed for tax the expense of that hotel room if that's not your main residence. I happen, you know, the sort of 10 or 12 days that I'm in London, I have elected that my main residence is the Park Lane Hotel. And consequently, my second home is a house in Glasgow that I can strongly recommend. It's a bed and breakfast run by a Mrs. McCauley.
This is the very first...
Oh, they're all fiddling, aren't they?
Everybody's fiddling.
I know everyone's fiddling. No, I mean, I used to fiddle when I worked in a petrol garage. I had sort of had, like, all sort of this thing with this carpet company, and they had all these lorries would come in, and they had an account with the garage. So they would say, oh, put 15 quid's worth of petrol and or diesel, and you put it in, and then they say, mark us down for 20. So then the till would be 5 gallons... in credit, so you could take that out in money and share it between me and my mate and the driver. And it got, and then people started getting greedy, and they'd say, oh, so what, tick 10 in and stick us down for 40 and stuff like that. And in the end, I was taking about £4 an hour out. This was in the 70s. It got to the point where my wages had come around on a Friday, and I think, oh, I've forgotten all about them. It was... We'd go, oh, yeah, we're fiddling. We wouldn't get all pious like these people, like Margaret Beckett with a pergola. Do you remember that? She had this sort of thing with had flowers over it, and she'd claimed for that, and she said it was essential because I was foreign secretary and I was hosting various ambassadors, and it was absolutely essential, therefore, that I had this thing, because obviously that's what's going to make the difference, isn't it, with ambassadors. They're going to come around and say, oh, we would have signed a Middle East peace agreement, but we're not seeing as the pergolas not at all up to standard, and some of your lilies aren't at all what I would expect from the Syrian ambassador, and therefore we are at war, Mrs. Beckett.
Everybody fiddles. Even the Pope fiddles his clothing allowance.
But Jacquie Smith was dubbed in by a neighbour. You would think that that person's life is now going to be complete hell, wouldn't it?
Mrs. Taplin.
Oh, you wouldn't want to grass up the Home Secretary, because the knee-jerk response squad are going to be kicking their door in, shooting them because they've bought too much hummus in Waitrose or something.
Taplin, this is very odd. They were so concerned that the law was being broken that they bypassed the police and they immediately emailed David Cameron about it. To his supporters, is he the fourth emergency service? Home Secretary Jacquie Smith is to be investigated by the parliamentary watchdog over claims that she's misusing her housing allowance by listing a room at her sister's London flat as her main residence. The Home Secretary has been accused of spending only two nights a week at her London home. I'm just working this out. She spends 3 days in London and 2 days in Redditch. That is 2 days a week unaccounted for. She must spend those plotting the destruction of our liberties in some hollowed-out volcano somewhere. 2 points to Fred. Mark, whose investment scheme is just not cricket?
Well, this must be this character called Alan Stanford, which if you're sort of normal and you don't follow cricket all that much, you've probably only just heard of him. But if you like me and you're obsessed with cricket, then this is quite amusing, really, because the English Cricket Board have just magnificently been utterly, utterly gullible to this bloke who said that he had billions and billions of dollars. And in a sense, it is a bit like, you know, if you just go around saying you've got billions of dollars, it seems you're just allowed to do anything. It's the very opposite from, say, banks normally, where you can't do anything because they're so security obsessed. If you're just normal person and you have to ring up a call centre and wait and wait and wait, and then they play Vivaldi and cut you off, and then you come through to somebody else. And then eventually, after about an hour and a quarter, you get through to some poor sod who's sat there all day in Liverpool going, right, well, Mr. Steele, what I'm going to have to do now is ask you for your PIN number and your security code and your special password and your ordinary password and your mother's maiden name and your bankroll details. And you think, what's the point? Because eventually they'll say something like, now, if you could just tell us your favourite breed of hippo, Mr. Steele. And you know, well, if you can't tell us your favourite breed of hippo, you can't take £8.50 out of your account, I'm afraid, Mr. Steele. But if you go around saying, hi, I'm Texan, I've got $50 billion, then the English Cricket Board just go, oh, Mr. Stanford, come this way. Would you like to take over the whole of English cricket and we will rearrange the entire international cricketing schedule according to your whims?
Mark, because is that right? Yes, but how could anybody be remotely surprised? Did you not?
No, of course, exactly.
No, the minute he said, I'm going to make cricket the most exciting game on the planet, you thought...
You won't appreciate this, Sandy, I'm sure, but this was one of the most exciting times of my life. I was asked to be the guest on Test Match Special, which I was so excited and all nervous and everything, because it's so brilliantly, magnificently English. So the first question I was asked, Jonathan Agnew, was lovely, but I mean, he was doing the interview, and he went, oh, well, Mark, well, my goodness me, I mean, it says on a bit of paper here that you were, back in the 70s, you were a punk. Well, my word. Well, don't seem to get... Goodness gracious, man, although isn't that magnificent? Only on Test Match Special could you still be shocked by punk. 30 years of youth culture has passed you by and you're shocked by punk. Johnny Rotten's doing butter adverts. And you're still shocked. And it was the whole thing, and it was brilliant. And I had my son with me, which was brilliant, because I turned around, and Jeff Boycott, you must have heard of Jeff Boycott, who was just brilliantly, brilliantly sort of Yorkshire, old Yorkshire cricketer who's now a commentator, and he was stood there in his sort of yellow and red stripy tie, and he came straight over to my lad, and he went, never met him or anything before, he was 11 at the time, he went straight over to him and went, and what do? You bat or bowl? Just a magnificent way to see the human species as being divided between these two categories. But he could be in the middle of Ecuador and be straight up to a woman on a donkey. What do you do, woman on a donkey? Do you bat or bowl? Kihas wicket keeper, all right.
Shappy's going to... Oh. No, because you'll drive me mad, you will. Chappy, back me up here.
Don't get me started on cricket, because we'll be here all night. We won't.
No. OK, good. I woke up as I do every morning to the Today programme, and I have been bored rigid with this recession-depression business, and I thought they cannot make it any duller, and then they said it's also something to do with cricket, and I just... It's like opening a Dear John letter and finding your P45 inside. It was...
Another good thing...
This is a cricket story.
No. Now, the thing I really wanted to talk about is that Graham Swann, it seems to me, is bowling a bit wide of the crease when he...
See, I love this. I love that. It seems to me so very British that you've got to be so smartly dressed you worry about whether the ball's going to go one side of the crease or the other. Right? I think that's smart.
And one of the greatest comments ever heard watching the cricket was from Australian Richie Benno. And you'd love this understatement, Sandy. Somebody had a vicious swipe at the ball and it went completely in the wrong direction from where he intended. And he went, and that's not to be confused with a good shot.
Well, this story is the first time you could connect the world of cricket with the term high interest. Texan billionaire Sir Alan Stanford, who promised to transform English cricket, has been accused of an $8 billion banking fraud. The Securities and Exchange Commission started their investigation into Stanford on Tuesday morning, but had to stop on Tuesday afternoon when it started drizzling.
It must be weird to go on the run when you're involved in cricket, though, isn't it? Imagine John Arlott commentating on somebody becoming a fugitive. And he's making his way rapidly now into the criminal underworld, taking on a new identity, and he's flying to South America, where he'll run a small bar and doubtless marry a prostitute.
I'm very impressed with that, Jeremy, that you could do...
Hampshireman, you see, Basingstoke route.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And asthma helps enormously. Now, you'd think asthmatics have a bad lot in life, but if you're a John Arlott impersonator, asthma's a boon.
Anyway, 2 points to Mark. Shappy.
Hello.
Which collision course wasn't hushed up?
I believe this is 2 submarines.
Yes.
1 French, 1 English.
Yes.
Which bumped into each other in the middle of the Atlantic. They did. They bumped into each other. And they didn't realise that they had collided until a few days later when CCTV footage was recorded and sent. And this story fascinated me because these things are supposed to be the height of technology. And they did have very, very advanced things to be able to detect other craft in the vicinity. And in order to know if there was something near them, they had what's called an outer hull, which it makes a clanging noise when you bump into something. But they actually crashed, and I just imagine the crew sort of swimming out to get each other's insurance.
Well, I mean, I don't know much about submarines, but shouldn't there be somebody in charge, you know, looking out the window?
What worries me is it's caught on CCTV that this government is now so authoritarian they're fitting cameras to starfish now, to spy on the oceans. But I love
they
the way...
They didn't actually realise that they'd hit each other, though. They didn't realise until the French reported that they'd hit some sort of container, and apparently the British sub-captain went... Oh, that sounds familiar.
When they clanged together, do you think he went, oh, there goes me no claims?
A lot of equipment doesn't seem to work together. They've got sonar equipment for finding their way around. Then they have anti-sonar devices to conceal themselves from other vessels. This is the equivalent of a cyclist wearing a reflective jacket under a huge black overcoat. It's a...
They also had nuclear warheads. This is brilliant, this, because whenever something like this happens and we all think, bloody hell, nuclear submarines crashed, that's dangerous. And then, of course, the scientific people who know about these things say, well, yes, I dare say that does sound dangerous if you're a layman. But actually, if you research these things, you'll find that nuclear warheads occur naturally in pencils and salmon.
I may be responsible because just down the Clyde, there's a few submarine bases and I bought something off of a sailor. And it stops people banging into me when I'm walking down the road. I walk down.
Darling, are you often hanging around the docks hoping to get something cheap from a sailor? The British nuclear submarine HMS Vanguard and its French counterpart Le Triomphant collided with each other in the Atlantic earlier this month because both submarines were too quiet. Liam Fox, the shadow defence minister, said he hoped valuable lessons had been learnt. Well, mirror signal manoeuvre for a start. And at the end of round one, the scores are Fred and Mark have got 4 points, but so too have Shappy and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Sale and Altrincham Messenger.
Last week, we published an article about local author Benjamin J. Myers under the title Ian Gives Tuesdays a Twist. In addition to referring to Mr. Myers by the wrong first name, we would like to point out that he is a criminal barrister. We apologise for any upset caused by inadvertently missing out the word barrister.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Shappy. Who says students should Adam and Eve it?
This is Andrew Motion, the poet laureate, who says that students should read the Bible more because it will help them understand literature. Well, I was Bibled up at school because I went to a Christian school, but this was the 80s, and in those days they didn't call them Christian schools, they just called them school. And I went to Brownies as well, which is a Christian organisation, but my parents thought it was the after-school club for Asian kids. And We did learn about everything. We used to have the nativity plays and all that, and I always wanted to play an angel, but they said I couldn't. Only blonde girls were angels, and girls like me were the whores of Babylon. So that's the story. They're saying that they don't read enough and they don't know anything and they can't understand Milton and Shakespeare because they need to know stories about the Bible. You know, you need to know about Christ's resurrection. And in a way, that is true, because perhaps if I didn't know about Christ's resurrection, I wouldn't have enjoyed the episode of Dallas as much when Bobby came back in the shower.
I've got a list here. I just thought we'd try this and see if this works, OK? 10 commandments, I've got them here. OK, and see how many the four of you... It can't be that difficult, right? There's ten, OK? So I'll tick them off.
Oh, well, my favourite one is... Because there was... A reason I remember some of these is because I know that there was a sect in the English Civil War that brilliantly decided that the Bible was all wrong and anti-religious. To be a member of the sect, you had to break all 10 of the commandments.
OK.
And I just thought, I love the idea of people, like, wandering down the road, knocking on doors, going, you haven't got an ox I could cover, have you?
I feel disadvantaged because it's Anglican. Because we've got one, no shagging.
Yeah.
Two, I told you. Three, how many times do I have to tell you?
Honour thy mother and father. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal.
Kill.
Thou shalt really not kill.
Pirate videos, because that's a crime.
If thou wishest to smoke, thou shalt stand outside in a huddle. Oh. In the wilderness and not come back into Galilee until thou hast finished.
We've got 7 out of 10. I don't think it's...
I think if they want the young people to understand the Bible, they should write it in young people's language and have stuff like, and God destroyed him city and Lot's wife, look at her, him, she is well mashed up blood.
Do you know what I found... You know, when you're a comic, you stay a lot in hotels out of town, and you'll know hotels always have a Gideon Bible in the little drawer. Now, I don't enjoy a bath properly unless I'm reading something, and once I forgot my book, and I thought, well, I'll read the Bible that's bound to be in the drawer. And it wasn't there, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't there. And it was. I went to the receptionist, and I said, just out of curiosity, there's no Bible in the thing. Do hotels not do that anymore? And she goes, oh, no, it's just that when you booked, you had a funny name, so we took it out. In case you were offended.
Was there a falafel in the drawer?
When she comes down and says she wants lunch, don't forget to barter.
Poet laureate Andrew Motion says every child should be taught the Bible in order to understand culture and literature. And I think that's true. You don't really understand the lion, the witch and the wardrobe unless you know that bit in Revelation when Jesus turns into a lion and is adopted by Virginia McKenna. 2 points to Shappy. Jeremy, why can counting sheep send you barking?
Well, it appears, people used to say that people with mental illness who were having difficulty sleeping, people used to say, no wonder you can't sleep, you're mentally ill, whereas in fact it's the other way around. Lack of sleep can lead to mental illness.
I have a 17-month-old, and people talk about the sleepless nights, but they don't actually talk about how much it affects you. Like, you know, the loss of memory, the failing marriage.
Have you started to reach that stage now where you think, well, 17 months, we start to go out a bit, but still you think that the colour and consistency of your child's poo is appropriate dinner party conversation? Is that...
And everyone sort of takes the mickey saying that, oh, women's brains shrink when they have a baby and they get more stupid, but I was at my most stupid about 4 minutes before I conceived. It'll be all right, it's Christmas. But and the things that you're not prepared for, the lack of sleep and having to function on no sleep, is actually quite hard. So you go into another zone. And other things that you're not prepared for is that first night in the hospital with your newborn baby. I don't know if you've seen a newborn before lately, but it takes them a while to solidify. They don't look like they can last the night, and you take them home, and whatever happens, you have to keep the child alive. It's really frowned upon.
did you love? I mean, did you love the baby straight away? Because I think there's a different thing about when it's yours. I went to see a friend of mine, and the baby was not solidified, and it was brand new.
Mm.
And she said, "We haven't got a name yet. What do you think?" And I'm thinking, turnip.
You do lose your mind when you've got when you're exhausted and looking after a young child. When my daughter, who's now 18, was a baby, Mark came round to see me one day for a cup of tea, and I was just going to the loo, and I turned to Mark and said, "Daddy, go wee wee."
Well, I sympathise, Shappy. Personally, I sleep like a baby. Well, it seems pointless buying a bed when I still fit in the cot. Researchers at Harvard University have discovered that insomnia, rather than merely being a side effect of some psychiatric conditions, can also cause them. A link between insomnia and paranoia was highlighted in the play Macbeth. Scientists have now turned to Shakespeare's other work for further inspiration and are hoping that in the next few years they'll be able to tame a shrew. So 2 points to Jeremy, and at the end of the round, the scores are exactly even. Fred and Mark have got 8 points, but so too have Shappy and Jeremy. And before we start round three, here's a road sign spotted on the way to Northampton General Hospital.
Family planning advice: use rear entrance.
Thanks to Darren McLean for sending us that, Fred. Whose encounters will have to be brief?
Oh, anybody that's getting dropped off at Warrington train station. There has been a bit of congestion outside the front of the station, and it's been caused by people dropping their loved ones off and spending too much time kissing them goodbye, so they've put a sign up that disallows that.
This is to speed things up?
Yeah.
So now on the station announcements will be, we apologise for the late running of the 1321 to Manchester. This is caused by the driver and conductor being in a breathless clinch outside crew.
There are, according to the council in Warrington, areas. You can kiss in designated areas, which reminded me of when I was courting Mrs. Macaulay all those years ago. similar rules applied. Sandy, as I recall, I was allowed on the platform but couldn't board the train. If you
they had some spokesman who said if you want to canoodle, you can go and do it in the car park. Do it in the car park? That's dogging. That's not canoodling.
This is supposed to be romantic. Railway station is supposed to be romantic. You're supposed to kiss. That's the whole point. There'd be no Casablanca. You know, remember, we always had Paris. Oh, well, that time where you nearly leant over to me and then a bloke come over and said, come along now, no kissing, come on. Come on, we've got the Nazis moving in here now. Come on, Mr. Bogart. Away you go.
If we're going to have signs for everything that you can't do near a railway station, can I get one for my local railway station of a man standing with his trousers around his ankles waving his bits at the CCTV with a red line through it saying, none of that.
Oh, you're so unromantic.
Bye.
But single people have to do something, don't they? There's no one to kiss them when they're dropped off at the airport, so they've kind of dropped themselves off at the
Virgin Trains have put up no kissing signs outside Warrington Bank Quay station in an attempt to stop long goodbyes causing congestion. Virgin Trains claim that canoodling couples are holding up commuters. I think you'll find Virgin Trains are holding up commuters. So 2 points to Fred. Jeremy, whose plan for a new world order was hampered by an ill wind?
It turns out that Adolf Hitler broke wind at the dinner table. Now, that might have tipped the balance for a few people. Some people might have been prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt. But now, papers have been released to suggest that he had appalling manners. Now, if only the English upper classes had known this at the time, he wouldn't have had the support in this country that he did. Because you hear people like Lady Diana Moseley, who, when I've never listened to Desert Island Discs in the same way since Sue Lawley had Lady Diana Moseley on as a guest. And she was saying, well, of course, at the end of the war, one was rather surprised to learn of some of the things that Hitler had got up to, because he was the most charming host when we visited him in Berchtesgaden. And then Sula said, so record number 6 is again Ride of the Valkyrie. And you think, this woman is sitting there with a helmet with horns coming out of it.
Such a British thing to dislike him for his table manners. Oh, it was ghastly. If anybody knows anything, you should invade Poland from the left.
I know that the Tom Cruise film is ridiculously inaccurate, Valkyrie, because von Stauffenberg was actually a horrible Nazi who was only trying to blow Hitler up because he was losing the war. But it would also be nice to know that there is this other major historical inaccuracy in the film, in that whenever Hitler was sitting at a table and you were trying to blow him up leaving a briefcase, all the time he's going, oh, there you go, better out than in.
Apparently it made him very bad-tempered, and I'm not surprised. I bet goose-stepping must be difficult with trapped wind.
That's why they had those big baggy trousers tucked into boots, you see. It holds it. They invented the hovercraft.
All those photographs of him was just him confessing. That was me. I'll take the blame for that one.
As if annexing Poland wasn't bad enough, Hitler had terrible table manners, according to a secret intelligence report discovered during a house clearance in the West Country. I do hate this kind of information. Honestly, next we'll be hearing that Pol Pot picked his nose. Dinner party guests were particularly annoyed about his habit of helping himself to other people's food, or what he called annexing the Sudetensprats. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mark.
Now, this is something that I collected when I was up in Scotland at New Year from a paper that's in Peebles. Now, there's a little picture. Clearly what's happened is that the person who was sort of compiling the paper must have put a little note in, which was then meant to be something else, but the original note got left in. So there's a picture of some sort of like 9-year-old girls who were all receiving some sort of prize at the local church, and it says, caption, caption, write something about these pious little bleeders doing that in... doing that interminably boring thing so cherished by border festivals. What on earth is going on in this picture? These people have got to get out more often.
I know the Peebles paper you're talking about. That is not a mistake.
Jeremy.
This is from Graham Hobbs in Gloucester, and it's from the Church Times. Go extra mile, bishop pleads, as synod wrestles with women bishops.
Let's take a look at the final score. Fred and Mark have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Shappy and Jeremy with 13. And before we leave you, here is a cutting from the National Trust magazine sent to us by Janet Lawton.
February the 26th, Spring Walk, a circular walk of 5 miles with 7 stiles. There are no toilets on this walk. Walking boots and waterproofs are essential.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Fred McCauley, Mark Steele, Shappy Porsandy and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and Lucy Clark, with additional material by James Sherwood, Stephen Carlin and John Hunter. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.